This Janet Mufford Today podcast is brought to you by Trinity Debt Management, a nonprofit organization that helps people struggling with credit card debt. Their number is 800-793-8752. That's 800-793-8752 or trinitycredit.org.
This is Janet Mufford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mufford.
Thank you so much for joining us again. Well, we have been inundated of late with these headlines touting the latest allegations of sexual harassment or even sexual assault in entertainment and media circles. We've seen allegations of rape and sexual assault lodged against everybody from Hollywood mogul Harvey Weinstein to actor Kevin Spacey to veteran journalists like Bill O'Reilly and Mark Halperin. Even 93-year-old former President George H.W. Bush hasn't escaped scrutiny. But my next guest, in many respects, was an important trailblazer in emboldening women to come forward and speak out against some powerful men who they say have wronged them. Back in 2016, former Fox News Channel anchor Gretchen Carlson filed a sexual harassment lawsuit against network founder Roger Ailes, and it was her allegations that ended up leading to his resignation and concluded with a $20 million settlement. But Gretchen's quest for justice has not ended. She's now encouraging women to speak out against harassment and abuse, an issue that also affects more than a quarter of Christian women. And Gretchen lays it out in her new book. It is called Be Fierce, Stop Harassment and Take Your Power Back. And such an honor to have you here, Gretchen. Thank you so much for being with us.
Janet, thank you so much and for the nice introduction. And I would just add to that that one of the most important things to me when my story resolved was that I also got a public apology.
Yes.
Which is incredibly rare.
Yes.
Most often never happens. And actually, when tears came down my face that day, that was the reason why. For any woman who's experienced this before in their life, and it's almost all of us, unfortunately, they can understand what it means to feel vindicated.
Absolutely. How was it that you were able to get that apology? I'm just curious.
Well, I can't get into the exact details other than it was incredibly important to me. And not just for me, but again, for other women to know that through their acts of bravery and courage, that it's okay to come forward.
Yeah.
And it's okay to stand up and speak up. And really what happened, Janet, after my story broke was that I started hearing from thousands of women all around the world who started sharing their stories with me, and I realized what an epidemic we're facing in this country and how pervasive it is across all different career fields. And I felt this call of duty. And, you know, in being a religious person myself, I felt a sense of duty to make it right for so many other women who never had their voices heard.
Yes. It's so interesting because when you came out and you made your allegations and it first hit the news, I had the same reaction that a lot of other women had, which was, I believe her. And I think it was based...
Oh, wow. Well, thank you.
It was based, I think, on a lot of our experiences that this is so common for women to understand that this goes on, that a lot of women were very inclined to believe you before even hearing it, not to be unfair about it, but I think it resonated with so many women. And I'm curious your reaction as you're hearing more of these women coming forward and lodging these allegations against people like Harvey Weinstein and some of these others. Do you feel somewhat vindicated that, wow, in some way I paved the way for these women to feel brave enough to come forward?
Well, yes. And thank you so much for pointing it out that way. You know, it's really been a surreal experience for me because I could have never envisioned what was going to happen to me after I dove off the cliff by myself. Now to see that courage is contagious and that these women are not being maligned in the same way that I was, if I played any role in giving them the bravery and the courage to come forward, then, wow, I mean, I've accomplished my mission. And every day we're hearing a new story, and I really believe that this is a changing point in our society. And that's the way I have to look at it every morning when I wake up. But I really, really do believe it. And I'm so hopeful for our next generations and for, I know, for my kids and for anyone else who's listening.
Absolutely. Now, I know, as you mentioned, you can't talk about the particulars in your case, nor would I want to probe into any of that. But I'm curious what went into making the decision to step forward, because for a lot of women who've been in a situation like yours, they're scared to death. They don't want the pushback. Mm-hmm. They don't want to end their careers, all the rest. In terms of the decision-making process, what went into that for you?
So when I realized that after working incredibly hard for 25 years, working my way up to the national scene on television, you know, to a career that I loved, when I realized that that was going to come to an end for me, at least at that particular place, and it wasn't my choice, I realized that if I didn't do it, who would? And I also did it for my kids. I wanted them to know that their mom stood up for what was the truth. And, you know, I really underestimated my own children, to be honest with you, because I realized soon thereafter that they had already learned the lesson of courage and bravery from me, and I saw it in their own lives. Mm-hmm. I saw when my daughter came home from school on the first day that my resolution was announced, unfortunately, and I was very nervous about that, and she came home and she said, Mommy, so many people asked me all about you today. And she looked at me and she said, Mom, I was so proud to call you my mom.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I've seen it in my son the other day when I was in Los Angeles and doing some national TV interviews, and he happened to catch one of them, and he texted me, and he's only 12, but he said, Mommy, he said, I think you did a really great job. You were so inspiring to me.
Oh, and that means the world to you.
Know, that's what it's all about. Yeah, but it's about our, it's about everyone else's kids, too, in knowing that we need to raise our sons and our daughters to respect each other equally. And if it starts in the home, that carries through into the workplace. And that's how we also solve this problem. It's not just women coming forward, nor should the burden only be on women's shoulders to fix this.
Yeah.
It's actually a man's problem for the most part. And so what we really need is for our male colleagues in the workplace, most of whom want safe work environments for women, we need to encourage them to stop being enablers and bystanders, and please, please come forward and support us. Because when that starts to happen, that really will change the dynamic in the workplace.
Absolutely. There's so many directions to go on this particular issue, because when anybody has been in a workplace where somebody is sexually harassed, and we've all seen it, and a lot of us have been experiencing it, there is a culture that takes hold in some workplaces. I don't want to go to HR because I'd be accusing somebody who's a big deal, has worked at the company for 20, 30 years, has a high position. Who am I? They're never going to believe me. Is it worth going forward? How do you work through those sorts of issues, whether or not you should actually lodge a complaint, knowing that there can be some very serious ramifications against you? That is a terrible place to be in for a lot of women.
It is, and it's why I advocate in Be Fierce, the book, that we should change the way in which women and men are forced to come forward, and that maybe going to HR is not necessarily the answer. Now, I want to preface that by saying I've heard from a lot of great people who work in HR who do want to be on the right side of this. But let's just look at the way it all fits together within companies. In many cases, the perpetrator can be the person signing the checks.
Yeah.
And so who is HR going to be beholden to? Not the person coming to complain, but they're going to do everything to try and save face for that person who may be in a huge position of power and paying them. So what I advocate for in Be Fierce is for companies to really take a stand on this once and for all and hire independent people, ombudsmen of sorts, to come into the corporation to be able to take these complaints so that people feel more comfortable coming forward, knowing and thinking there won't be the same amount of retaliation or cover-up. And also, you know, so many companies have sexual harassment training right now, but a lot of it is just cover your you-know-what
yeah.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so what I advocate for is bystander training. Let's really teach employees how to get the bravery to come forward and to do what's right to help their colleagues. You know, once we do that, it really changes again the way in which we look at this issue, and you go from being a liar and a troublemaker to being somebody who was brave enough to come forward.
Right. Well, now here's another question, Gretchen, which I would love to get your opinion on. There are people who say, is what happened to me enough to actually constitute sexual harassment? If he pats my derriere, for example, is that worth going to HR over? Is that worth complaining? Do you think that there are boundaries on it has to be this much egregious for you to come forward? Or do you think whatever makes you uncomfortable, you ought to go forward?
Yeah, so the law says the latter. The law says there are two kinds of sexual harassment, quid pro quo, which is a direct request for a sexual favor for like a promotion or an office with a window or whatever the case may be. And those are not subjective. They're pretty obvious. And then the other way is a hostile work environment, and that's where you can get into subjectivity. So you can, what I might think is an offensive joke, you may not, and vice versa.
Absolutely. Hang on just a moment. We're going to go to a break. We'll be back with Gretchen Carlson. Her new book, Be Fierce, Stop Harassment and Take Your Power Back. We'll return on Janet Mefford Today right after this.
Here is today's Capitol Hill Brief with Concerned Women for America President Penny Nance.
The harder and the more valuable the tissue, the more money you get.
I thought I was going to be just drawing blood, not procuring tissue from aborted fetuses.
That's the voice of Holly O'Donnell, who worked as a procurement technician for STEM Express, stationed inside some of the biggest Planned Parenthood abortion clinics in Northern California. Ms. O'Donnell became a whistleblower against the company's unethical and potentially illegal practices. On her first day on the job, she almost passed out as the remains of an aborted baby were dissected in front of her. She testifies the company then sold the parts to research customers across the country. But the worst part is nobody has been held accountable for this yet.
Join the fight to defend the unborn and give them the right to live. Every life matters, and we want to see laws passed that uphold these values. Visit CapitolHillBrief.org to fund the fight today. That's CapitolHillBrief.org. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org, and regain control over your healthcare costs. That number again, 855-585-4237 or libertyhealthshare.org. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. Thank you so much for joining us. And it's also great to have with us former Fox News Channel anchor Gretchen Carlson. Her new book is called Be Fierce, Stop Harassment and Take Your Power Back. And she has just inspired so many people and has served as something of a trailblazer for a lot of the women who are now coming forward with their own accusations of sexual harassment and indicating what has happened to them in their workplaces. Gretchen, we were talking about when to go forward, and you had mentioned that under the law, certainly if you have a scenario where somebody is asking you to do something in exchange for a promotion, you know, a sexual favor type situation, or creating a hostile work environment. The problem that I think comes into play at times is how sometimes other people in the workplace might react if they don't know what happened. And that also can be a way of keeping people silent. In other words, the guy I like who sits next to me is friends with that guy. Now I might lose his friendship as well, or he might think my claim isn't serious. What about those interpersonal problems that come into play in the workplace, and how a woman can just say, it doesn't matter if I was actually harassed, tough luck, I'm going to go forward and tell somebody?
Yeah, well, I think today, in this month, in 2017, the woman feels a lot more courageous than when I did it, just because of the landscape that we're in right now. You know, the floodgates have opened, and it's a tsunami of sorts. So I think I've been telling women who still reach out to me by the thousands every day, you know, please go to the media, go make something of your story, because right now people want to hear this. But I want to get back to what we were discussing before the break, which is, of all these women that I've heard from, Janet, I have to tell you, none of the cases have really been subjective. I mean, what's been so horrifying to me is how outrageous all of these stories are, and we're talking about current time, 21st century dialogue. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. It's not like it's not like somebody just did one joke or somebody just said, I like your dress. I mean, I don't want people to think that that's what we're talking about here. We're not.
Right.
We're talking about egregious, over-the-top, Harvey Weinstein types of allegations that I have heard from thousands of women in every profession, from waitresses to bankers to teachers to members of our military to people who work in churches. Nancy French, who was, you know, a very well-established book writer, came forward with her story about what happened to her in her own church growing up in the South after my story broke. And I included her in my book, Be Fierce, because this happens to Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Christians, Jewish people. I don't care who you are. It can happen to you. And so I don't want people to think, well, you know, a lot of these women are just, you know, they just don't have a sense of humor or they can't take one compliment. That's not what we're dealing with here.
Right. Exactly. And in that portion of the book, which I read, where Nancy French was talking about her feelings, she had expressed concern that sexual harassment and sexual abuse are not big enough issues among Republicans. And I think she's, to some extent, right. I would also add, I don't think it's enough of a big issue inside Christianity and churches and in Christian organizations. It goes on in all these places. How do you change that? And why is it? I mean, it's frustrating to me saying, why isn't this a big issue everywhere? Because this is, as you say, a human issue.
100%. It's a human dignity and a human rights issue. So here's what I'm doing about it. Aside from writing the book, Be Fierce, and starting the Be Fierce movement that I hope everyone will come on board, I've set up the Gift of Courage Fund, and I'm financially supporting organizations that empower boys and girls, women and men. I've set up the Gretchen Carlson Leadership Initiative, a 9-city tour for underserved women to be able to come and learn more about this issue and get help. I'm extremely proud of that. I'm advocating on Capitol Hill because we have to change the laws, Janet. We have to take the secrecy out of these arbitration clauses that so many women are signing when they just go to work, and they're giving up their open jury process as a right. And that's what I'm trying to eliminate in a bipartisan bill. Now, imagine if I could get this passed with nothing getting done on Capitol Hill right now. Wouldn't it be great if I could get this passed in a bipartisan fashion for women and for men who also suffer as victims? And so next week, I'm back on Capitol Hill. This tends to be a Democratic issue, but I'm meeting privately with Republicans as well to get them on board, because I know it's not going to happen unless it's bipartisan.
Good. And the timing is perfect, like you said, given all of the headlines we're seeing right now. This is something that is so important. And, you know, when you talk in your book, one of the things that struck me, Gretchen, was you even talk about back in your Miss America days and the way you were treated back then. Has this been a recurring theme, would you go so far as to say, in your life, that you've encountered these sorts of things, or this has happened in the lives of the women you've spoken to, that it's not just a one-time thing, but has been a recurring thing?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say it, unfortunately. Yeah, it's an equal opportunity offender, and it's an equal opportunity victim to happen many, many times. So happened to me twice in egregious fashion as I was at the tail end of my years, Miss America, trying to break into the television business. And, you know, the interesting thing was it was only in writing this book, Be Fierce, that I realized those two incidences of men forcing themselves on me was assault, not even just harassment. And then it happened to me in my first job in Virginia, ironically, after I was just covering the Anita Hill hearings 2 months into my new career. And it happened to me with a cameraman in a car in a rural part of Virginia, and I was scared for my life.
Oh, man.
So, you know, it's not like it's a badge of honor to be able to say, hey, it's happened to me a lot of times. Yeah. But then, you know, when it happened to me later in my life, I think I just had so much more perspective. I had children, and, you know, I didn't want it primarily to happen for our next generation. And for anyone who's listening, who would ever want that to happen to our kids? Nobody.
Right.
And that's why I'm just so proud of this Be Fierce movement and so many people having the bravery to come forward. And for the other people who it hasn't happened to, having the courage to say, I believe you.
Right.
You know, that is just so essential that we can turn more people to know that this is pervasive and it's everywhere, and to believe us.
That is really important. You know, and going back to what you were talking about with arbitration clauses and contracts and how they contribute to the issue of sexual harassment, clearly you don't have an arbitration contract in every single job where you might be as a woman, but why are those there? What do you think the real reason is that they are there? Do you think it's kind of nefarious in a way that in case something goes on, we'll be protected and she can't go public, that sort of thing? What are your thoughts on the fact that they exist at all?
Well, it's a great question, Janet, and I do believe, I mean, not to call out every company that they're trying to cover up bad behavior, but look, if you're a lawyer for the company and you know that you can instate this arbitration clause and nobody will ever find out about any wrongdoing like racial discrimination or sexual harassment, I mean, what a perfect thing to allow the harasser to stay in the job and the woman to get rid of her, and she can never say what happened. So arbitration clauses were never intended to be used this way. They came about 20 years ago or so to unclog the court system for minor business disputes. but not for issues of human dignity and human rights. And that's how they're being abused right now. And it's quite honestly how we're fooling our culture into thinking we've come so far with this issue, because we don't hear about these cases. But the reason we don't hear about these cases is because they're all going into secret chambers.
Yes.
That is what's so eye-opening for people to understand. So that's why I'm advocating so hard on Capitol Hill, and also for companies to reexamine whether or not they really want their employees to sign these non-disclosure agreements for issues like sexual harassment.
Yeah, that's good. I also really think it's important what you outline in the book as far as your 12-point playbook to help women stand up for themselves. What would you say of those 12 are some of the most important steps to take if you do find yourself sexually harassed on the job?
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. I really wanted to make sure I provided this for women and men. And what I've been recommending is that they just take Chapter 4 and put it in their back pocket, because you never know when you're going to need it. First and foremost, you have to contact a lawyer before you do anything else, even just for 10 minutes, because every state has different laws, different statute of limitations, et cetera. Number two, document, document, document. Write in a journal. Keep all emails, texts, cards, communication. Write it all down and take it home. Number three, please tell two trusted colleagues. I know it's hard, but if you can at least tell two, you will have witnesses, and that is so incredibly important. So those are my top three, but there are 12 in the book, and I recommend that everyone pick up a copy of the book so that they have it with them in case they find themselves in that situation.
Very good. That's important advice. You know, looking back on this over the course of your life, what are your thoughts on why this happens? Why is it, do you think, and I know we can't paint with too broad of a brush because every man is different, but why do you think this sort of thing goes on? Do you really think that in most cases it is sexual in nature, or do you think it's more of an issue of power?
Definitely power. I think that there's some sort of an issue there between the man and woman relationship with some people that, you know, that they want to be able to let them know who's boss. And unfortunately, it's been going on way too long, but rarely is it actually about the sexual act. It really is about being able to completely strip away and drain out any self-confidence that victim feels. And I can tell you, it happens in an instant. Everything that you've built your life around, your talents, your brains, your hard work, it suddenly diminishes you in an instant to feeling insignificant. And this is why we really need to tackle this issue and start calling out the perpetrators and the harassers and transferring the shame to where it belongs.
Amen.
Away from women who also are entitled to the American dream.
I agree with you completely on that. And are you confident, Gretchen, when you see what's coming out, that there will be some sweeping changes in addition to what you're working on in Capitol Hill with some of these politicians? Do you see change ahead on the issue of sexual harassment and abuse because of all this that has come forward, your case, as well as others?
I do. First of all, harassers are pretty much hiding out right now and maybe in the fetal position in some cases, you know, wondering if their story is going to break. But I also think companies are taking notice. And here's how else they can help besides increasing training and encouraging people to come forward. They can also hire more women.
Okay.
They can also put women in higher positions. Because what I found out in my research, Janet, is that when you have more women in those positions, guess what? Sexual harassment doesn't happen as frequently. I mean, I know it sounds so simple, but, you know, let's look at the stats. 94% of all Fortune 500 companies are still being run by men. And that's why, until we can increase those numbers and put more women in higher positions, we need men on our team. It's why I wrote a whole chapter in Be Fierce about men who defend, because I found so many of them. There's so many men who want to do good work, and so many men want safe work environments for women. It's just these random jerks we have to get rid of.
Absolutely. Well, the name of the book is Be Fierce, Gretchen Carlson. So wonderful to talk to you, Gretchen. God bless you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We'll be back on Janet Mefford Today after this. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Trinity Debt Management, a nonprofit organization that helps people struggling with credit card debt. Their number is 800-793-8752. That's 800-793-8752 or trinitycredit.org. Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. Well, Obamacare is back in court this week as 18 states and the District of Columbia are seeking to stop the Trump administration from eliminating the cost-sharing subsidy funding in the Affordable Care Act. And of course, this comes as Americans will have fewer choices of insurers and largely face higher premiums as the open enrollment period crops up. What does the future hold for Obamacare? Still, so many of us are waiting for it to be repealed. Sometimes it feels as if it will never happen, but we're going to get some thoughts on it all now from Dale Bellis, Executive Director of Liberty Health Share, a national nonprofit healthcare sharing ministry. Dale, always great to talk to you. How are you?
Janet, it's a wonderful pleasure. Thank you for the invitation. Doing wonderfully well.
Good deal. You know, this is interesting. We are still seeing so many bad news items about Obamacare, and I'm curious as to what you've been hearing about the latest and what people are saying to you about how this just continues to unravel and become more and more of a problem for people as their costs go up and they continue to face these higher premiums and fewer choices with insurers.
It does seem that our political leaders are confounded over exactly what course of action to take regarding health care and national access, et cetera. We're just grateful as a healthcare sharing ministry that we have this path that we can run down, express our own both religious and personal freedoms, and just offer to the rest of the nation the opportunity to come join us in this methodology of sharing medical bills with people of faith and values.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've noticed, Dale, and I'm sure you have too, there have been a lot more pieces in the news recently about healthcare sharing and how this is becoming a very popular option for a lot of people because they don't feel like it's such a good idea to be on an insurance plan anymore for obvious reasons. What has been your reaction to seeing really the media catch on to the benefits of healthcare sharing?
Well, I'm grateful for the recognition that this is an alternative means for meeting healthcare costs. We're always open to public review and scrutiny. I think that helps us all in terms of realizing that the health insurance model has largely brought America to the brink of failure.
Yeah.
And now there's an awareness that there are alternative means for meeting healthcare costs is amazing to me, Janet, that we've been told for generations, for decades, that the only way to meet medical bills is through insurance.
Yeah.
And now there's this broadening awareness and recognition that mutual aid and mutual assistance to one another is a viable way of meeting those costs.
Well, I'm curious to ask you, the Federalist had done a piece recently involving Obamacare, and there was a section there on healthcare sharing and ministries like Liberty Health Share. One of the things that this writer was pointing out is that Republican proposals to replace Obamacare may have the effect of penalizing healthcare sharing ministries and in ways like removing them from eligibility for tax credits and things like that. I'm curious to ask, what is the latest that you're hearing about healthcare sharing ministries and how they are being, you know, perhaps hurt in the future or maybe helped currently? I think a lot of people are wondering, what does the future hold for Liberty Health Share?
Well, in all of the iterations that have passed before Congress in the repeal and replace efforts, in every instance, we have had a voice, gratefully, in that legislative process and a very warm response by both the Senate and the House to protect the definition, the federal definition of healthcare sharing ministries as being exempt from federal mandates about healthcare.
Good.
And so I'm very positive and hopeful that anything that does occur on the federal level will continue to exercise acceptance of that recognition that healthcare sharing ministries are exempt from federal mandates. And we've continued to make our voice heard. And while there are pockets of potential opposition to that, particularly in the private sectors, at least to date, the federal legislators have been very responsive and open to that kind of protection.
Good.
And interestingly, I would just say, Janet, today I saw a bulletin released by the White House as to various free market options regarding healthcare, and healthcare sharing was mentioned.
Great.
In the White House document. So I was very positive about that.
Yeah, and you hit upon a key phrase, and that is free market. And as we have seen the advent of the Affordable Care Act, more and more Americans that I've talked to are very frustrated about what appears sometimes to be the loss of the free market, or at least the compromising of the free market. How do you see Liberty HealthShare upholding the free market and giving people choices that they don't necessarily have if they're on insurance?
Well, it's interesting that since 2010, there has been a mentality that has been adopted, particularly by Congress and the federal legislature, that they have a role in determining what access or affordability of health care insurance might be made available to the American public. That's never been the case before. While there has been various pieces of legislation that have related to healthcare, never before in the history of our fair republic has there been the mentality that the federal government's in charge of delivering healthcare to America.
Right.
And so by recognizing that healthcare sharing ministries are exempt from that mandate, it has kept alive that opportunity for men and women to exercise their free choices based on ethical and religious values. They've recognized that there's a whole swath of the public that are self-sufficient, self-supporting, and follow their own conscience having to do with health care. And for that, we're grateful.
Exactly. Well, this has been something that's really been a plus for Liberty HealthShare, as we've talked about before, that you're not forced to pay for things that are conflicting with your religious conscience as a Christian. What are you hearing from some of your members, Dale, about the best benefit that they like? People who've been on insurance for years and end up going for a health care sharing ministry and trying out a new way of paying their medical bills. What are you hearing from them about the best results of having done that?
Well, the cost efficiency is typically the first thing that catches people's attention, is that as a healthcare sharing ministry, we keep costs low because of the fact that it's our money, we're health conscious, and we access deep, deep discounts in the marketplace for our members. And so that's number one. But number two, interestingly, is the sense of fulfillment and the sense of significance that comes from our money going to another person that has a medical bill. Every month, our share amounts, we call them, are set aside in our online account. Again, we call it a share box. And it goes to another person that has medical bills that month. We can message them with cheer or encouragement or prayer. And like a true social community, stand with each other during those times of medical expense crisis. And our members tell us that's almost the number one reason why they enjoy healthcare sharing so, because their dollars are going to another person, not a company black hole somewhere.
Yeah, a company black hole is something to avoid. Yeah, and for those who are new to the health sharing ministry model, we sometimes wonder, well, how do I make sure somebody shares with me? How does that work?
Well, every month, we ask our members to set aside a particular share amount, $199 for a single, $299 for a couple, $449 for a family of three or more. We don't count more than three. And that goes into their online secure account called a share box, and it's matched to another member that month who has a medical bill. If, for instance, not everyone's share amount is necessarily used that month, it would just stay there. You'd add your next month to it. It would be shared next month because obviously expenses fluctuate month to month.
Right.
But our goal is at the end of the year to really even out the amount of medical bills submitted versus the share amounts that are matched. And we've been successful in doing that each year during our existence. And our share amount has not increased because it's been adequate to meet all of those costs.
Very good. Well, you can check it out, libertyhealthshare.org. Dale Bellis, Executive Director. It's always great to talk to you, Dale. Thank you so much.
Janet, thank you so much for the opportunity. God bless.
God bless you, too. We'll be right back on Janet Mefford Today. This is Janet Mefford for Trinity Debt Management, a nonprofit Christian organization that helps people get out of debt. Here is Ann's story.
I had numerous credit cards and I was struggling with paying them off. I had heard about Trinity, so I made the call. They took care of all of my credit cards and now I am completely debt-free. The people at Trinity are very friendly. They will do whatever you need them to do in order for you to feel better about being in a very difficult place. My name is Anne, and thanks to Trinity, I'm debt-free for keeps.
If credit card debt has you down, Trinity Debt Management can help. Trinity will consolidate your account, put a stop to late fees, and drastically reduce your interest. There is hope for tomorrow. Call Trinity at 1-800-793-8752. That's 1-800-793-8752. 1-800-793-8752. Hi, this is Janet Mefford. Did you know that you can help create the next great Christian missionary force? It's true. Right now in Lebanon, there are 2 million refugees living in tent settlements. They're the innocent victims of the brutal Syrian civil war, and more than half of them are children who are at great risk of Islamic radicalization and sex trafficking. But in the midst of the darkness, Heart for Lebanon is offering the hope of the gospel. Through their hope centers, Heart for Lebanon is feeding these children, giving them a Christian education, and introducing them to Jesus for the very first time. Hearts are really open right now, and the Lord is changing their lives, but we need your help. Your gift of $22 will rescue 4 children. Your gift of $98 will rescue 18 children, an entire classroom full. Will you please help us help these children who will go home one day and reach their nations for Christ? Call now, 866-485-9187, 866-485-9187. There's also a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Please pray and please give, 866-485-9187. Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. Well, the Apostle Paul laid it out in 1 Corinthians 15 when he said, "For what I received, I passed on to you as of first importance, that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day according to the Scriptures, and that he appeared to Cephas and then to the 12. After that, he appeared to more than 500 of the brothers and sisters at the same time." Now, for us as Christians, we know a lot about Jesus' birth and ministry and death and resurrection, but there are still a lot of people out there who don't know the truth about Jesus, and there's a new documentary series coming up that will help answer a lot of the questions about the Lord. It is called Christ Revealed, and we're going to talk today with Dr. Patrick Gentempo. He is the co-founder and CEO of Revealed Films and is a respected international expert in the world of health and wellness and business. He's also host of Christ Revealed. It's a 9-part documentary exploring the scientific evidence for the resurrection of Jesus Christ, and you can find it on ChristRevealed.com. It's going to be available exclusively online. We're going to find out more about it now from Patrick Gentempo. Patrick, great to have you here.
Great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you. So Christ Revealed is billed as bringing to life the history of Jesus like never before. Tell us a little bit about how it does that.
Well, it's very epic in nature, which is why there's 9 parts to this docuseries. You know, I've seen many documentaries that have been done before, and they're very good, you know, but most of them are, you know, it's maybe a 60 or 90 minute thing, and it's concentrated, phenomenal information. But in my mind, one of the biggest takeaways from the experience of creating this has been that there's a vast mosaic here when it comes to Jesus and the total picture, if you will, and going on this journey, putting together multiple pieces is something that I believe leads you to a situation where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
Right.
Where now you're getting more of the picture, more resolution, more understanding, and diverse views. And you know, the consequence of which is that there's an incredible inspiration that comes out of it, and I think an enormous rational validation for Jesus Christ.
Well, that is great. And I know you've got a lot of heavy hitters who are helping you put this all together. Talk a little bit about who all is involved.
Well, you know, the people that we interviewed, we went all across the United States, and then we spent a lot of time in Israel. But I'd start out by saying one of the people that I think everybody would know is Governor Mike Huckabee. And my interview with him was just, I got goosebumps. For him, I just remember as he was talking about what it means to have a public life and to be very upfront and forthright about your faith, You know, it's not a simple thing when you're running for the presidency of the United States and are willing to profess your faith, you know, uninhibited. And I asked him a lot of questions about that because I said, you know, looking at, you know, literally how politics can be a sewer, you know, to stay clean, do people try to advise you, hey, can you tone that down a little bit to, you know, maybe, you know, attract a wider audience that would come and vote for you, what have you? And we talked about what, you know, what it was like through that experience. And also on a very personal level, just what Jesus, you know, means to him, his family, his life, his experiences, his moments of doubts, et cetera. So the Mike Huckabee interview is a phenomenal interview. We interviewed Sean McDowell, who is the son of, you know, Josh McDowell, who most people know. And Sean is just such a bright and talented and intellectual spirit. And there are things that I didn't really know, you know, with some of the work that he does, the teaching he does, the students he has, and how he willingly and ambitiously exposes them to other things, like taking a group of his students to Berkeley to interact with a group of atheists.
Right.
And to take them to a mosque to interact with a group of Muslims. And, you know, rather, because I believe that the outside world, if you will, the brand, if you will, of Christianity from the outside, that people look through a lens and they think that it's blind faith, that you have to check your rationality at the door, that it's very insular, that they don't like to have discourse or interaction with people who don't think like them. And one of the big revelations out of this is that that's all completely untrue.
Right.
And I believe that when you look at the intellectual prowess, Gary Habermas, unbelievable, Greg Kokel, Randall Price, Jay Warner Wallace, Joe Holden. I mean, there's some people in this thing that are intellectual heavyweights with extraordinary academic credentials who make a very compelling and rational argument for the validity of the Bible, of those gospels. And then we get into the evidentiary side where I'm literally in archaeological digs, some of which are very recent, throughout Israel, talking to the archaeologists who discovered these things, like the Pool of Siloam, Bethsaida, and other such places. And what's remarkable to me, I mean, what I really found startling, is that 100% of these archaeological finds, many of which are recent, corroborate what's written in the Bible.
Wow.
So when you start looking that thousands of years after the Bible is written, that we're starting to unearth evidence, and the evidence in a detailed way corroborates what was written, the validity and the level of confidence you can have in the Bible, I think, goes way up.
Well, that is really exciting. As you mentioned, some of my favorite people there who are in your film, and that they really are great intellectual heavyweights, and they really know their stuff. And I'm interested because one of the things that's been brought out is the idea behind this film is to see what scientific evidence actually is out there to support the fact that is proclaimed that Jesus did rise from the dead. And it's interesting because many people will say, well, of course, Christians just believe that because it's a matter of blind faith. Coming away from this project, what would you say about that claim that the resurrection is only based on blind faith?
What I would say, and I think it's one of the most powerful points made in the entire program, is that, first of all, these Christian scholars cringe at the concept of blind faith. They think that their position being that Jesus said that the way to me is through your heart and mind, not just blindly believing, but using your own mind, your own logic, your own rational faculties to understand that this is the truth.
Right.
And the arguments that are made that is so, to me, that were so compelling is, and with the lines of logic that are used, start with just the basic logic of many of the things that are written, the witnesses, et cetera. And, you know, and I would ask some questions about, okay, well, you know, maybe this was a delusion, maybe, you know, all the other possible explanations. And these guys were so well informed about the fact that, yes, there you can make other arguments, but let's lay this out, which they do very clearly. And now, what do you think the most logical argument would be, or the most logical conclusion would be? But when you take the, I call it more the abstract reasoning, you know, the philosophical logic that's put to play on the whole concept of the resurrection and that whole area of what we investigated, and then you match it to other archaeological evidence, which I would characterize as scientific evidence, something that's empirical, something that comes out of the ground, something that you're holding, you're looking at, not just kind of abstractly considering, and match that to the reason and the rationale that's there, it starts to become really overwhelming in its power.
Right.
So, and what I, one of the things I had a concern about when we embarked on this project, when we're going through, like some of the people I mentioned in the apologetic community, is that they would all just be saying the same thing, you know, it'd be kind of like the same conversation over and over again. And what I was surprised and delighted about was the fact that they all had a different point of view, a different concept. They all come to the same conclusion, but they're not all just repeating the exact same argument. So the depth and richness is, it comes to life in multiple waves, if you will.
Very exciting. So tell people how they can see it. I know it's available online at ChristRevealed.com. When can people see it?
So this is going, it will be released globally for free on November 7th. And you go to ChristRevealed with an ED on the end, ChristRevealed.com. And right there you can register. And we will be releasing an episode per day for 9 days. And then everybody will have an opportunity to watch the entire series over the course of those 9 days. And it's really just that simple. We encourage people to share it with other people. I think it's going to stimulate phenomenal conversation. And so for people of faith already, I think it just strengthens and deepens the faith, and it's going to give you a glow. I think it's going to make you feel really good as you're experiencing it, and you're going to learn some new things. But in addition to that, you know, I think there's a lot of people out there who are a little bit lost, wandering, maybe had faith, and for whatever reason, you know, in life, they've lost it along the way. I know a lot of Christian students go, they're raised in Christian households, they go off to college.
Patrick, I'm so sorry, we're going to run out of time. I want to make sure people hear it again. I'm going to give out that website one more time. It's ChristRevealed.com, as Patrick mentioned. It's going to be released Tuesday, November 7th. Patrick Gentempo, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
God bless. Thanks for being here, and thank you for listening to Janet Mefford Today. We'll see you next time.